some questions, we will do official public comment, so hold your comments. But if you have questions about what you heard, something you didn't understand, something you want to know a little more about, now's the time for that.
And again, there are lots of regional planning body folks in,
yes,
in the room.
Right. That's, she doesn't have to be the only person who answers those questions. Sir.
So I have a somewhat detailed question, but potentially of interest for folks in this, this area. Page 75 talks about dredging and how the Army Corps of Engineers use the plan to inform their dredging navigation projects. It says they'll consult with the plan. And then when you look at the best practices in Chapter 4, page 145, it's 142, 145, it's around IDing potentially impacted stakeholders. Does that mean the Army Corps of Engineers is committing to use the best practices identified in Chapter 4, or are they just committing to consult with the data portal?
Both. Army Corps was actively involved in writing Chapter 4. So they're absolutely, literally, we literally wordsmithed it in a big room on a screen. It was very painful. They are absolutely, they're particularly the regulatory folks, helped write those best practices. So the question, the answer is both. You know, Chapter 3 talks about how we're going to use the information to guide and inform our decisions. Chapter 4 is really about how do we work better together. So the two are kind of, it's almost like artificial to separate those two. But those are two sides of the coin. So thanks for that. And you clearly read the plan, Nick.
Yes, sir.
Here's a current event that an organization like yours should probably, this would be right down your wheelhouse. You probably all saw a month or so ago where thousands of seals were hitting the beaches in Cape Cod. And I've been trying to follow that story, and there's nothing that I can find since the first couple of days. And I was just wondering, did that come across your radar at all? And, I mean, it seemed like the possibility of an algae bloom of some kind was driving these seals to the beaches, but who knows? I mean, did you get involved in that at all?
The regional planning body didn't, but I think your point is a good one in that how important it is to understand how things are changing and that, you know, as we keep this dynamic and keep this conversation moving into this next phase, it's going to be really important to be able to call on the data portal for a regional context of what's going on. I'm not going to say it's going to answer that specific event and that specific, I mean, that could have been an anomaly, we don't know. I'm sure my Gloucester colleagues and marine mammals were absolutely aware of that and involved. But I think what this does is really allow us to keep tabs on how marine life and habitat is changing over time, you know, whether there was an ocean use involved. There was a whale that washed up on Chatham. That was a ship strike situation. I went right on the data portal to figure out, oh, you know, what was in that, what different things were in that space? How could that have happened? You know, so it's a resource. It's a resource for anybody to use as context for any specific question, but it's probably not going to be the be-all-end-all source of information for a specific event, but it's an awfully good place to start. Thanks for that.
Any other clarifying questions? Yes.
So I was really encouraged to see in Chapter 4 that BRC is committing to continuing a robust stakeholder engagement process. I saw written that you're committing to do that so far as funding will allow, but I'm wondering if you can give a little bit more specifics on how you envision that process and how will it be different from the planning process and your two initiative products.
Yeah, that's a good question. We absolutely want to. So I spent a little time on an engagement slide. We want to know if that worked for folks. Is there anything you want us to do differently going? I mean, implementation is going to be a little different. We're going to be test driving this plan. We're probably, the RPB may only meet once a year instead of three times a year. But I think, you know, that aside, that doesn't mean that the conversation isn't any less rich. I think it's just going to be different. So we want your input on how you'd like to be engaged in the implementation phase. I don't think we have it all mapped out, but it's probably going to look a little different from storming and norming and the goals, you know, this stuff that is part of the planning process, and it needs to be probably a little more targeted toward evaluating how we're doing. Again, big project comes along, how is this plan helping us do things a little differently? And the public needs to be engaged in that conversation.
Very quick one. You talked about using peer-reviewed information. What about a great body of gray literature out there? Everything from fishing reports from the 19th century to the present to other things that are factual, but they haven't gone before peer-reviewed committees.
John Weber, you can jump in if you want on this. But in terms of QA/QCing information, like I said, we've had a lot of experts involved in reviewing all of the data that we have used. What I mentioned was the portal points to additional data sources that can absolutely include gray literature, but the stuff that's on the portal is, verified and QA/QC'd. And so I think there's absolutely an opportunity to include more, but maybe it's pointing to that as an additional data source.
The primary data you want it to be able to be used in regulatory processes without people wondering its quality. Okay.
Yeah, because a lot of that data in there is federal data. It's owned and verified by that federal agency, and the portal points to it. And so as the agency updates it, I think that's the goal anyway. Anything more on that from the RPB? Okay.
We do eelgrass data, right? The historical eelgrass. So.
One thing we did with eelgrass data for this plan was actually to knit together all the state data layers of eelgrass for the first ever regional eelgrass data set.
Did you say you had historical data?
Oh, no. There was historical data on eelgrass. Any state folks know the answer to that? Or EPA?
So the eelgrass data does come from the states, but
yes.
I think the key point there is that, what you said, Betsy, is that for that topic as well as others, the portal also points to other sources of information that should be collected. And the only other thing I'd say is, to this whole conversation, is what's also on the portal are the methods that were used, who we talked to. The point was made about gray literature and other sources of little key peer review type of processes that were done. That's laid out with each data set in the portal. So we really commend that to you all to take a look at for the specifics of how we went about doing that, especially providing the review.
Yes, sir.
This is the northeast section you're doing. Do we have one at the southeast? And do we have one at the Gulf? The West Coast?
So I'll start and I'll kick it to Joe over here. The National Ocean Policy, the executive order I mentioned, did actually divide the U.S. up into 9 regions. Only the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic are producing plans by the end of this administration. There are several others that have started up. The Pacific is one. The Caribbean is another. The West Coast is a third. It's not as simple. Some of these regions, like the West Coast, have like over 200 tribes.
The short answer is the goal is to carry it nationwide and through our territories.
Yeah.
But the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast are, I guess, the lead. We're off the starting blocks first. So the goal is to produce these 2 plans by the end of this administration. And the rest of the group, I know the West Coast is chomping at the bit, but the challenge for them actually is much, in my mind, much, much greater, because the way they divided up the West Coast, it extended from Washington all the way to Southern California, and it's tough enough to do Northern California, Southern California. Now you toss in Oregon and Washington, and I tell you, as a native Californian, that's going to be a handful right there. But it looks very promising. The other one that's actually off to started, they've got their charters set up, is actually the Pacific Islands, which includes Hawaii, American Samoa, Marianas, Guam. So it's got quite an expanse. And when you consider the geographical expanse and the time zones that are associated, remember, Guam's on the other side of the dateline, so they're a day ahead. So the challenges of coordinating all those groups, they're started. They've got their charter signed out and they're proceeding.
So if we can't do it here in New England, this is a good place to start. But I think they'll all look a little different. That's the flexibility that's afforded is focus on the issues that really need to be solved and grappled with in that geography.
Do you know the number of the executive order? So if I was going to look it up, it'd be
1, 3, 4, 5, 7.
1, 3, 4, 5, 7.
Okay.
Tattooed on it. Tattooed to some people's brains by now. Okay, yes. Thanks.
Yeah.
Sir.
I've got part of my problem here is I got so many questions. Is selecting this. But let me start with to begin with that my overall impressions are positive. I think you've done well with a very difficult task here. I enjoyed the fact that you got a professional writer in right off the beginning in that first chapter. That helped a lot. And if you could continue with a little help from in that aspect, it would be good to help smooth out some of the rest. I learned an awful lot, but I almost wished I had some of this information at the beginning of this class. It would have saved me a lot of aggravation. And probably this whole process a lot of aggravation. If we had all the aspects of what these federal agencies are doing, how they communicate with each other, what these necessary elements are that you've brought up here now, it would have saved so many of the questions of what are we going to do with this stuff? What are we going to, that was kept repeating over and over. What are we going to do with this data throughout the thing? That's under the water, under the bridge. But if there is anything that I see that I would disappointed in is this sort of tangible direction to what these agencies really are suggesting is something new and new directions as far as of solving those compatibility issues, solving the...
Sorry, can I ask you to hold the comment part? We're going to get there in just a minute, and that way we can get it formally recorded, your comments. Right now we're just doing questions, and then we'll come right back to you for the comment. Is that okay?
It's all right. Okay. I don't know what I'm doing here.
If you could do the question, any other questions, and then we'll come to the comments, and we'll make sure that we officially record your comments.
So clarifying only
just things you didn't understand or you want to hear more about. And I know you did have a number of questions if you want to pick one or two of those at this time. And then we'll come back to you for your comment.
Come back.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I'm just trying to understand. You keep discussing the plan. Creating a structure for interagency communication and future use planning, and it's going to be like a government agency. Is that my understanding, or is it going to be an informational organization? Because
the regional planning body itself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, the plan. You set up this plan. I haven't seen in here, because I haven't seen the plan, and people have obviously read it, but there's nothing in this literature that tells you where to go to see it. You have a website for more information.
Yep, we sure do.
And the plan.
But I don't see it in here. It's like there's a web address
The
link to the plan.
Yep, yes. On the last page, yeah. there's a link to that.
For details.
Yep, that's our main website, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to understand, like, these agencies are committing to best practices
yes.
and stuff, so... What you have here is a suggestion for them to follow, or is it an overseeing coordination of the different agencies? Because you have government agencies and then you have community agencies. It's a huge mass, but there's... And the plan, I'm hoping it details which agencies have been involved in.
Yes, it does. Yep.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, because I don't see much about public on this. You didn't start with... Like, I'm a kind of grassroots person,
uh-huh.
So it looks like you identified agencies and talked to agencies and came up with a plan. But then you asked for public input, but there's been very little public input sessions. And you just have a month here, but I'll wait for that for comment. But I'm just trying to understand.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
you know, what this is exactly.
So let me,
it's just
yeah.
a plan for mm-hmm. what? Interagency yeah. communication or?
That's a big part of it. So the executive order does spell out who sits on that regional planning body, who's around that table. It's the feds, the states, the tribes, and the Fishery Management Council. So that body created the plan with public input. And there's been about 3.5 years of public, of different kinds of public input. I tried to hit on some of that in that engagement slide. There's a whole engagement plan that we put together earlier in the process to really make sure that we were, you know, in this region-wide effort, understanding what the issues, what the values were, what the issues were, getting around, talking to industry, talking to the public, talking to different regional groups to better understand what matters. But at the end of the day, it's an executive order, which means it's the federal agencies that are committing to using this ocean information to guide and inform their decisions. That is the commitment that is to that executive order. So that's important to understand, I think. The plan directs the federal agencies first and foremost.
Yes, ma'am.
But hopefully benefits a lot of other folks as well.
I just wanted a little clarification about your definition of stakeholders. It seems to be primarily ocean users. Are you also including, for example, environmental NGOs?
Oh, yes.
And how? As part of the working groups or just a general comment, and how do you get additional information from them and individual researchers and people like that?
Okay.
And
yes.
the general public.
Yeah, that's a good question. So stakeholders is a broad term. Really what we're talking about is non-government folks. And so a lot of our working groups included non-government people, scientists from academia, nonprofit folks, marine industry folks. All of those work groups are all on our website in terms of the membership of all those folks. We also had a lot of big open workshops and public meetings where anybody could come. Anybody could give their 2 cents in terms of influencing that. And we also put a number of different documents out for review along the way. So there's been a lot of different types of engagement in that sense. But it was very important for us, as I mentioned, in terms of the way we vetted the data, to definitely work with some of those ocean users, if you will, those folks that work out on the water in that ocean activity, because they know well how that information about that activity should be portrayed to actually reflect what's going on the water. So that was a really important way to engage ocean users or stakeholders in that. I mean, stakeholders is a large term. It's who has a stake in this. Everybody has a stake in this. But then the various groups had a lot of different various roles as well. So we can spend more time on that, and I can help direct you to places on our site where there's a lot of our engagement plan, where we break down all the different ways that we've worked with different types of people and on the membership of all of those work groups. A lot of folks have been involved.
There's still an open door to groups that want to get involved.
Yeah.
Just to add to that, the states also had coordinated at different levels kind of their own stakeholder groups to solicit input. So Kathleen and I, in order to inform our roles on the planning body, convened groups of representatives from the NGOs, from industry associations, so everyone from different fisheries associations, Maine Lobstermen's Association, Susan Swan and Kathleen, help me remember what's the
Marine Trades
Association. Thank you. We had Surfrider Foundation. We had Conservation Law Foundation. We had Sierra Club. We had Biodiversity Institute. We had tried to really run the gamut of research institutions, NGOs, and then also some municipal representatives as well. But it's hard to reach out to sort of any interested public without knowing kind of who that interested public is. So we tried to seek representatives.
The reason I asked is that every time I read these lists of participants, it seems to be predominantly those who are interested in extraction of some sort.
I would not say that I think that
may be just a word.
Yeah, I actually think that's not the case. I think we actually had a really... Both at the RPB meetings, members of the public, I think we actually had, I would say, probably a heavier presence from the environmental community and from people who use the ocean as recreation than from some of the extractive resources. Coast Guard has been very active in engaging with the maritime community in each state. So we have harbor safety meetings, and so we actively go out and talk to the pilots and the affected users. So they've been very informed and engaged in giving us feedback on specific information and also how things are going. So there are a wide number of stakeholders that are involved in this process.
Thanks, Michelle.
Great. More clarifying questions. Yes.
You've got a lot of moving parts here, a lot of agencies that have a potential to be in conflict of interest all the way. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, it's a really good question.
Because otherwise it's meaningless. If there's obstructionism, like in a local governor or something, or if there's obstructionists inside the group that gets to move the thing forward, how do you deal with it? That's all.
Yeah, so in terms of federal agencies, there are absolutely tough issues out there. Like, sand is one of them. NOAA's got essential fish habitat interests, whereas the Army Corps and BOEM have, you know, they're more in charge of extracting it, and the states are somewhere in between. I mean, that's why we're having this conversation. That's why we're having a broader conversation, so that it doesn't just end up being a one-on-one, or, you know, one agency with one state, the same agency with the next state, and the next state. We're having a regional conversation about some of these things. But to answer your question, I think what we're trying to do is have a much more public, transparent conversation about these tough issues so that we can work through that. It doesn't mean that anybody's mandate trumps anybody else's. That's not what this plan does. It doesn't set up preconceived, you know, agenda or outcomes in terms of what should happen where. It's an information overlay, and it commits us to, you know, using these best practices to talk early and often, so we understand where each other are coming from. We can try to sort through that. But you're right.
Not much confidence.
But having an earlier conversation about this and actually understanding each other's roles is not something we've really done so well in the past.
Right.
So it's a step forward, but. Yeah. They're calling a spade a spade. It's out there.
Sir?
You've used the term best practices several times. It's an evolving and a moving target. With better research and better understanding, best practices change on a continuum of one sort or another. So how do you, derive best practices within your plan, and two, how do you update?
Yeah, I think, the best practices in the plan were really were derived by this group sitting down together and saying, the state saying, we want earlier notification of when you know about a proposed project out there. Will you please tell us earlier? Or a consulting agency like NOAA saying, it would be really helpful if you gave us more the next days, or that we knew. You know, you didn't wait till the clock started to ask if there's an impact, if we could have a conversation earlier. So a lot of this is based on, I think, frustration with the status quo, and really kind of like figuring out ways within our existing authorities that we can just, in this little region of New England, have conversations earlier and write some of those down. So, for example, with the Army Corps, they do these pre-application meetings. You know, we want some more consistent communication like that across agencies that involve states, that give a tribe a heads up so they don't learn at the 11th hour. And I think you're exactly right. I mean, we've got to test drive this. We've got to give this plan a chance to play out a little bit and figure out what we need to change to adapt it so it works. We may have completely missed something. We may get a project that comes along where, you know, it really would have been helpful to do X, and that's not in the plan. Well, we've agreed in Chapter 4 in implementation to update this plan every 5 years. But we can amend it, you know, with smaller changes along the way. It's meant to be a dynamic document and sort of a different way of doing business. It's not meant to lock us in. It's meant to move us in a new direction. So does anyone else have anything to add to that? John? No?
I think, from a state perspective, I think some of it is also memorializing when you say best practices. It is existing practices that are already out there that are informal. So conversations that are being had between EPA and Army Corps, but the public doesn't know about it. So this way, we were getting everything out in the open and kind of allowing people to comment on what we're doing maybe informally and memorializing it in the plan so that now, you know, we have something to look to, whether people change jobs or someone retires. I mean, existing best practices where there was some bright spots in our working relationships in New England because it is such a small region, and EPA is set up that we are a regional agency, so we have all of New England. So some of this is already happening, but a lot of it is because people have been working at agencies for 20 years together, and those relationships just naturally occur. We wanted to make it a more formal, memorialized best practice process so that whoever's sitting at the seat, EPA is, you know, going down the checklist and going down the best practice, and we have that to look to for now and then change it as things change. You know, most of our laws and regulations that we have to enforce, or you know, we're regulatory agencies, the Clean Water Act, the Ocean Dumping Act, NEPA, these aren't going to change, at least not easily, so we have to, you know, memorialize how we're going to implement these so that there is some consistency, so that if a project or a proposal or there's, you know, federal action to do something, the public has at least, you know, a starting point of what they might expect from our federal agencies. And then also the data sources, so that we're all looking, you know, all the federal agencies and the project proposals are all going based off the same data, so that it kind of weeds out maybe some of those projects that maybe wouldn't get implemented no matter what, you know, because of certain laws and regulations. Hopefully this is a way to kind of point people in the right direction, essentially, early on.
So let's just take a couple more clarifying questions. I'm conscious of time, and I want to make sure we do have time for the formal public comment. So people who haven't had a chance, sir.
Yeah, it's an interesting question about within existing authorities, and I'm wondering if the plan takes a look at existing authorities and tries to identify, well, what do we need to do? What additional authority do we need that would improve solving the problems that we've identified?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The short answer is no, we really didn't go there with this initial effort because the executive order was pretty clear in stating that here are your boundaries. You operate within these existing authorities, and you need to do a better job within those existing authorities. If you have a comment, an idea, after reading the plan on you know what your thoughts are, by all means, public comment is open to any of that. But that wasn't our charge to identify those and change them. We're really trying to work kind of within our lane, but do it differently. Thank you for the question,
Sir.
Yeah. Quick question for you, for anyone. I haven't read the plan, so confession, but and you talk about commitment. What if agency stakeholders are uncommitted? What kind of teeth does it have, if any, to assure that some of your lofty goals are met?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So the executive order does, you know, asks federal agencies to comply with the regional plans. And so it's the federal agencies, again, that are held to the plan. There is also, and I have one, there's also, in terms of recourse, well, first of all, the agencies themselves wrote the commitments in the plan. So, and those were blessed at the highest level. I've spent a lot of time in D.C. Making sure that the agencies understand what we're committing to. And that is why it took us a while to get this draft out, because that needed to happen. But there's language also in the plan and in some of the executive order documents that you know we need to implement this plan to the extent that it's applicable with our laws. And so if there is something that an agency does that goes counter to the plan, but it's within, you know, that there needs to be a rationale for why that agency went in a different direction from what's in the plan. But the plan is meant to guide and inform our regulatory and management decisions under applicable law. And so the idea is that the federal community will comply, and if not, there better be a really good reason, and rationale needs to be provided. But again, we have this blessed at the highest level, and we took a lot of time to make sure that we put commitments in there that were that made sense, that were practical, that were doable, and that we really had a lot of these Fed-to-Fed conversations now, as opposed to waiting for a big project to come and saying, well, no, we can't do that. So we're really trying to pave the way for this to succeed.
All right, last question is.
Just one quick question. How many people are involved in this right now? How many? And you're all federal employees, right?
No. So the federal, the regional planning body has the 9 federal agencies. So that's one of us for each federal, for each department, and then the 2 people for each from each of the 6 states, and then 6 tribes, et cetera. But so you're asking about the regional planning body itself?
Well, just how many people are involved in this? So, I mean, how many people are involved in this program right now?
So, well, there's...
I mean, this gentleman is not on your payroll. This gentleman is a United States Naval officer.
Yes.
He's
representing the Department of Defense. I'm representing the Department of Commerce.
Right.
She's representing the EPA. She's representing Coast Guard. So there are members of the regional planning body are committing their time to this effort. We also have a lot of people within our, I mean, a lot of this, again, has to do with, in order to operationalize this plan, we've got to be working within our own agencies as well.
I understand that. How many people are involved in this?
So,
is it 10, 15, 20, 50, 60, 100?
So the regional planning body is about 30 people?
Staff, yes. There's
members of the body. There's about 30 of those, and then below that, supporting the work of the body, like as you might expect, it is a bureaucratic effort to get 9 federal agencies and 12 state members together and the tribal members, and planning a big meeting takes staff. So there have been a handful of staff who actually have staffed the regional planning body themselves. There are staff within each agency, certainly at the federal level. At the state level, it's a little more ad hoc. It's mostly just Kathleen and I in Maine. We have looped in our colleagues in our agencies when we needed to get some additional information or support in thinking through something. But for the most part, it's the members of the body who have been at the table making the decisions with the tremendous help of a lot of staff work.
So you say 30 people?
On the body. On the group itself that's making the decisions that's put together the plan.
It's 30.
It's a good question. Okay. So let's move into public comment. So for public comment, we're going to ask you to say your name.